When I left home this morning, I got my final two-word instruction. It wasn't good luck, and it wasn't best wishes. It was speak up. So I'll do my best to speak up. And I also depend on the boys down at the back there to give me a bit of help in the speaking up. I want to read some verses in the early verses of the book of Ruth. Just some of the early verses of the book of Ruth, but my text this morning is from the book of Ecclesiastes. So Ruth and Ecclesiastes. In fact, you might wish to keep your Bible in your hand. I might just read towards the end again a little part of a psalm that I have in mind. But for now, we'll read in the book of Ruth, chapter 1. Ruth, chapter 1. And reading from verse 1. Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land. And a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. And the name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife, Naomi. The name of his two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah. They came into the country of Moab and continued there. And Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left under her two sons. And they took them wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpah, the name of the other Ruth, and they dwelled there about 10 years. Mahlon and Chilion died also, both of them. And the woman was left of her two sons and her husband. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law, that she might return to the country of Moab. For she had heard in the country of Moab how that the Lord had visited his people in giving them bread. Maybe we'll read verse 19. So they too went until they came to Bethlehem. And it came to pass, when they were come to Bethlehem, that all the city was moved about them. And they said, Is this Naomi? She said unto them, Call me not Naomi. Call me Mara, for the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, and the Lord hath brought me home again empty. Why then call ye me Naomi, seeing the Lord hath testified against me, and the Almighty hath afflicted me? So Naomi returned, and Ruth, the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her, which returned out of the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem in the beginning of barley harvest. Now turn over, please, to the book of Ecclesiastes. Job, Psalms, Proverbs. Ecclesiastes. Job, Psalms, Proverbs. Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes in chapter 7. And it's reading two verses, commencing at verse 13. Consider the work of God. For who can make that straight which he hath made crooked? In the day of prosperity be joyful, but in the day of adversity consider. God also hath set the one over against the other, to the end that man should find nothing after him. Notice, will you, verse 14. In the day of prosperity, be joyful. But in the day of adversity, consider. My text this morning, or my subject, will surround those six or seven words that's found in verse 14 of Ecclesiastes 7. I'm thinking of those words, in the day of adversity, consider. It's interesting, isn't it, that Solomon, the wisest man, when it comes to giving a piece of advice on how to deal with the day of adversity, he doesn't give you a pamphlet or a booklet or a book. You imagine he could write a lot about it. He just said one word. In the day of adversity, consider. I find that very interesting. In the day of prosperity, yes, be joyful. But in the day of adversity, consider. I wonder if I ask a question this morning. How do you feel you fare in dealing with adversity? I think it's an area that we could all improve upon. I'm not so sure that any of us have really got a handle of it. I think we all will battle with adversity and how we deal with adversity. And so that's my subject today. The text, the day, in the day of adversity, consider. Solomon, in this passage in Ecclesiastes, he's given consideration to a number of issues. It opens up with a good name, he says, is better than precious ointment. And he's dealing with life and death and sorrow and laughter. It's better to go to the house of mourning than the house of feasting. And he's dealing with wisdom and foolishness and patience and haste and all these things. But when he comes down to verse 13, he seems to be saying that in all our consideration of things and things under the sun, we need to give serious consideration, ought to give serious consideration, and keep in mind the sovereignty of God. So many things in life we can't understand. We never need ever to keep before us the sovereignty of God. And in verse 13 he says, if God makes something crooked, he might make it straight. And he might even use men to help him do it. However, on the other hand, if he wants us to stay crooked, there's nothing any of us can do about it. Who are we to argue with God? In the great discourse between Job and his friends, Elihu said to Job concerning God and God's ways, he says, he giveth not account of any of these matters. God's not bound. He doesn't have to explain himself. Indeed, that's what Paul is saying in the book of Romans. Paul says something similar, Romans 9, 20, 21. Nay, O man, who art thou that repliest against God? Shall the thing formed say to him that formed it, why hast thou made me thus? Hath not the potter power over the clay, the same lump, to make one vessel unto honour and another unto dishonour? So by faith, we hold on to, we grasp the greatness of our God. And we rest in his will, knowing, believing, that all things work together for good to them that love God. Romans 8 and 28. All things work together for good. What a great verse. What a lovely truth that is. Romans 8, 28. All things work together for good to them that love God and to them that are called according to his purpose. Keeping that in mind, keeping all that in mind, we then realize that all the events of our life are controlled by God. Every event of life is controlled by God. And then it then follows when you come into verse 14. Solomon, he issues this imperative command. He says, in the day of joy, in the day of prosperity, be joyful. And in the day of adversity, consider. God gives us blessings. And God gives us burdens. And there be days of prosperity, yes, and we can all be joyful in them. But at the same time, he'll give us adversity, days of adversity. That's the reality of life. And Solomon says, in that day of adversity, consider. Consider. The word consider, it seems, just means inspect. It just means analyze. Evaluate. Just stop and consider in the day of adversity. Careful how you react in the day of adversity. A day of prosperity, a day of adversity. Solomon, verse 14, says that God has just set these days one over against the other. Both days. God allows both days in our lives. They have both been appointed by God. Days of adversity, days of prosperity, days of adversity, both appointed by God. They answer to each other. They never clash. They're not at variance. They come at the right time. They come using the right methods and in the right circumstances to the benefit of all those that are exercised thereby. All events of life controlled by God. In the Song of Solomon, the last verse of chapter 4, the bride says, "Come, awake, awake, O north wind, and come thy south, and blow upon my garden, that the spices, that the fragrance of the spices might flow forth, and that he might enjoy his pleasant fruits." You see, for a garden and for the maturity of fruit and for fragrance and flowers, it requires the warm, balmy, gentle southern breeze at a certain time of the year. But on other occasions, the garden also needs the chill of the north wind to blow, maybe to mature or ripen the fruit. It requires both. So it is in life. So it is for the believer. The day of adversity, days of trouble. We'll all meet trials. Our faith, as we heard last week, Brother Ken, last week he was on a similar theme. He said we'll all be tested, our faith will be tested. Days of adversity. And so I ask a question this morning, how do you react to the day of adversity? What a comfort it is to know that God can be trusted in every circumstance of life. What a comfort it is to know that all is part of His divine plan. So much of life now that we may not or cannot understand. But the entirety of all our lives, all the difficulties of life and the trials and the perplexities of life, all will be made one, known one future day. Isn't that so? How we love the old hymn that says, "Not now, but in the coming years, it may be in the better land." We read the meaning of our tears, and then sometime we'll understand, we'll catch the broken threads again. Finish what we here began. Heaven will the mysteries explain. Then we'll understand. What a comfort to know that God can be trusted in every circumstance of life. The text is, in the day of adversity, consider. God gives us blessings. God gives us burdens. God gives those days of prosperity, and equally so, He gives us those days of adversity. We know it, we believe it, but man, we find it hard to accept at times. None of us like the day of adversity. How do we react? How do you respond this morning? How do you cope in the day of adversity? Solomon says, consider. You notice what he doesn't say. I couldn't help but sit the other day and think about what Solomon didn't say. He didn't say, in the day of adversity, complain. And yet when you think how you feel in adversity, and when you think, maybe speaking and listening to others of God's people, How many have you heard complain? There are those that are better at it than others. In the day of adversity, complain. Children of Israel, man, they could complain. Isn't that what made Moses' life leading these children of Israel so difficult at times? It says they chided against Moses. They complained in the wilderness, in adversity. Exodus 15. They crossed the Red Sea. And on the far side of the Red Sea, they watched the Red Sea close in on the Egyptian chariots, and the Egyptians are drowned. And they sing the song of the redeemed. In the day of prosperity, you can hear their joy. They sing the song of the redeemed. Chapter 15, Exodus. You don't read much further. I think it's 17. You find them there 3 days without water. And they complain. Day of adversity. The reaction? Complain. How do you react in a day of adversity? Do you crumble? Do you creak? Are you not sure of yourself? Do you doubt? Are you starting to fall to pieces? Some would curse in the day of adversity. When Peter was in a tight spot, when the going got tough, just simple questioning by a maid, he started to curse and swear. It's wonderful sometimes how God's people react in the time of difficulty. Satan said to God, he says, "Doth Job love thee for naught?" Satan's saying, Job's only in it for what he gets out of it. You've prospered him, but take it away. And he says he'll curse. And after Job lost all, it says that he said, "The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." And in all this, Job retained his integrity. And then Satan came again and said, "Aye, but what about skin and bone?" And he took away his health. Now he's sitting covered in boils from the sole of the head, from the sole of his foot to the top of his head. And he's scraping himself with a potsherd and he's sitting in ashes. What a picture. The last thing you need is somebody saying to you, as his wife did, "Job, why don't you just curse God and die?" And Job said, "You're speaking as a foolish woman. The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. Shall we not receive good from the Lord? Shall we not receive evil?" Job is saying, there's days of prosperity, yes. Why should we then complain in the day of adversity? They're both given by God. They're both allowed by God. All things working together for good to them that love God. I wonder, you, like many people, you collapse in the day of adversity. I wonder, do you just capitulate in the day of adversity? There's no harm in admitting that, you know. There's no harm in saying I've been there. There's no harm in saying I've reacted in all these ways. Because some of the best of God's people, it's recorded in Holy Scripture in situations like that. We don't react maybe as we ought. It seems we forget. And Solomon's advice, consider. Faced with adversity, trials and perplexities and difficulties in life, whatever they might be that come your way, recognize that God has allowed it. Consider. Elijah under the juniper tree. The great Elijah great victory at Carmel. Now he's under a juniper tree. I said, just let me die. I've had enough. Time of adversity, and he just collapses. If it can happen to Elijah, it can happen to us. If it happens to Elijah, maybe it has happened to you. Oh, be careful. A man made a remark one day, an elder. And he made a remark to me of another man. And it just sounded a little bit judgmental to me. And I said this. If I faced the adversity that man faced, I don't know where I would be. I'll make a no comment. I haven't been there. I had a memory, vivid picture in my mind. I could see the man standing at a grave site and four little kids around his feet. Wife and mother buried. I think if I am in that situation, I think if I faced adversity like that, I'd collapse. Where would you be if you faced adversity like that? And to hear a comment made, hey, no, I'm not passing any remark on that. I don't know where I'd have been. Ah, yes, you see, we can react differently. We all can cry and complain and chide. We all can crumble and creak and crash. I purposely read about Elimelech. Because broadly, when we face trouble, I think we react in three different ways. We can either endure it, or we can try and evade it, escape it, or we can embrace it. I think generally the three reactions would fall into those categories. We endure it. That's not the way to do it, mind you, but endure it. And it weighs us down like a heavy burden, this adversity, whatever it is, whatever the problem is. It just seems to get the better of us time and time again. And we just go on enduring and enduring, but the problem about enduring it is that it makes us bitter. It's inclined to make people bitter. And it sort of distorts your view on other things as well, the way you look at a thing. You're just enduring it. Some believe that Naomi was bitter, was very bitter. She came back from Moab, a very bitter woman. She says, the Lord has dealt bitterly with me. Call me not Naomi. We read those verses. Call me Mara. I'm not so sure if she continued to be a bitter woman. But certainly her experiences in Moab were very bitter. She lost her husband. She lost her two sons. She was in poverty. She was a widow. And she was a stranger in a strange land. And what a bitter experience. We can endure adversity. Better if we can overcome it. Better if we can deal with it. Better if it becomes our master. Don't let it become our master. But it can make you bitter. On the other hand, if only we could embrace it. If only we could recognize it and accept it for what it is and hold on, just as Solomon says, consider. All things work together for good. Say like Job, he knoweth the way that I take. And when he has tried me, I shall come forth as gold. Embrace it. Amid the trials that I meet, amid the thorns that pierce my feet, one thought remains supremely sweet. Thou thinkest, Lord, of me. What need I fear when thou art near? Thou thinkest, Lord, of me. If only we could all embrace our trials and recognize that God is in it, and hold on to the great truth that all things work together for good to them that love God. I feel that most of us are like Elimelech. We try to escape, and we try to evade. Whenever we went to meet the teachers of Lurgan College, when Adam was there, the parents had to go to meet teachers once a year. And after we met two teachers one night, I said to Patricia, I said, "Trish, do you notice something? Every time we mention this fellow's name, the teachers just grin. They just grin." I said, "What's he doing?" And then one teacher said to us one night, "Adam," she says, "Adam, he just chooses the path of least resistance." Always remember that little phrase. Adam just takes the path of least resistance to everything. I'm not amused by it. I thought to myself, well, I'll maybe do the same thing myself. Elimelech, he thought he could escape. We read in Ruth of a day of adversity. It says a man, a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, in the day of adversity, there was a famine in the land. The land that God had given them. Bethlehem, Judah, Bethlehem, the house of bread. The promised land. All the tremendous heritage. That land flowing with milk and honey. Ah, but day of adversity. And this man, he turned his back on it all. He just thought he knew better. And he thought he would take things into his own hands. And his faith in God is gone now. When you see Elimelech backtracking on that path that his forefathers took across the Jordan, the upper end of the Dead Sea, and they entered the land. And now here's a man and he's going in the opposite direction. He's walking by sight, not by faith. We were reminded on Thursday evening of Abraham, Genesis chapter 12, Abram as he was then. He's another man that left his home. I but ask you, Abraham, where are you going? Where? Why are you going? Hebrews 11 says, by faith Abraham, when he was called to go out, he obeyed and he went. And he didn't even know where he was going. But he was just believing God. And he was walking by faith. Not so with Elimelech. There was a famine in the land. There was a forsaking of the law. He went to the heathen land, the wickedness and the idolatry and the immorality of the enemy. And he thought he would find shelter and more. There's different reasons as to why he went. Different ideas as to why he has gone. But he certainly didn't intend to stay. It says he went to sojourn. He just thought he would evade the day of adversity. He thought he could escape it. He's out of the will of God now, though. He has a tremendous name. My God is King Elimelech. Fancy a man taking a name like that into the land of Moab. Famine in the land and a forsaking of the law. Then it says in verse 3 that he dwelt there. Verse 2 it says he continued there and then he dwelt there. He sojourned, but then he settled. And then he succumbed. He died, verse 3. He drifted, but then he dwelt. That's dangerous. And then he died. What is it Dennis used to say? Dennis used to say sin, he said it in the gospel, but he also said it concerning believers, be careful. Sin will take you further than you want to go, and sin will keep you longer than you ever intended to stay, and sin will cost you more than you ever intended to pay. And that's Elimelech. Oh, he didn't intend to stay. Oh, but then he settled. Then he dwelt. He continued there. And then he died. What's he doing? He thought he could miss out. He thought he could evade, escape the day of adversity. He's a father who takes the lead. I often notice that when I read that. There are young men here, and it's good to see so many young folks about our assembly. We often say that. And there are young men, but they're not only young men now, they're young husbands, and they're not only young husbands, but many of them are young fathers. Be careful of the decisions you make. Yes, there's a time when you only have to think about yourself. Those years are short and fleeting. You're a single man, you can just make your own decisions and decide for yourself. But as you get older, there's others to think about. And this man says, a certain man, he took his wife, and he took his two sons, and they went to Moab, and they're out of the will of God, and they're backtracking, and they've left Emmanuel's land. We see a fateful day of loss, he dies. But then we see failure even down the line. His sons, they marry Moabite women. Again, forsaking the law. What consequences of a man who thinks he can evade and escape a day of adversity, takes matters into his own hands. All these early verses of Ruth, they serve to tell us. We need to stay in the will of God. We don't compromise. In the day of adversity, says Solomon, consider. He didn't say complain. He didn't say collapse. He didn't say capitulate. He didn't say compromise, and Elimelech compromised. And he loses his testimony. And he dies in Moab. And we read it. His wife returns. I wondered, did she stop at three graves before she left? And she said, I went out full. The Lord had brought me home again empty. But it says there was a famine in the land, yes. But yet she says, I went out full. There might have been a famine in the land. But they were where God wanted them to be. And that was fullness. And instead of trusting in God, Elimelech went out. We cannot control the circumstances of our life. But we can certainly control how we respond to them. We can't control the circumstances, but it's within our control how we respond to them. In the day of adversity, compromise. No, no. The word is, Solomon says, consider. Consider. You see, the day of adversity for the believer, it could be educational. It could be to allow God and His ways to be made known to us. It's called chastening. Those that He loveth, He chasteneth. Hebrews 12 and 11 says, now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward, it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them that are exercised thereby. Consider. Consider, it's something that's allowed of God, and there's reason for it, that we might know His ways more intimately. Consider it, is it to purify by the removing of dross from the life? That can be so. First Peter, the trial of your faith being much more precious than of gold that perisheth. Trial to remove the dross. Job says, He knoweth the way that I take, and when He hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. Consider, is it to lead us to greater and better and more spiritual maturity? That's where Brother Ken Humphreys was last week in the first chapter of the Epistle of James. My brethren, he says, verse 2 of James chapter 1, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials and testing. Count it all joy. Verse 12 of the same chapter, blessed is the man that endureth, that overcometh testing. For when he is tried, or when he is approved, he shall receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to them that love him in that day. Oh, faced with adversity, be careful how you react. Oh, don't fly. Don't complain and don't give up. And don't collapse or capitulate. And certainly don't compromise. Bear in mind those great truths that we believe and know and say we believe them and put it into action. Demonstrate faith. Faith in action. The Lord worketh all things together for good to them that love God. Consider, in the day of adversity, just stop and consider. John 15, those early verses of John 15 that Brother Morris handled so accurately and so ably a few weeks ago. In John 15 it says, every branch that beareth fruit, he purgeth it, that it might bring forth more fruit. You see, the adversity, is it to increase our fruitfulness? It could be. It could be for correction, maybe sin in our lives. 1 Corinthians 11. It could be to allow God to make his ways known. It could be educational. It could be to purify. It could be to lead to greater spiritual maturity. It could be to increase our faithfulness. The day of adversity. It's in the plan of God. How do we react in the day of adversity? We can endure it and it will make us miserable and bitter. We can try to evade it and avoid it. We can try to escape it. Or we can embrace it. We can embrace it. We can endure our trials and complain. We can evade our trials and compromise. Or we can embrace our trials and heed the great advice from the wisest man, the mighty Solomon. In the day of adversity, consider. I said I might turn to it. Just turn quickly to a couple of verses that are in Psalm 143. Psalm 143. When we read concerning Elimelech, it was a bad example of how to deal with adversity. The book of Ruth, 85 verses and over 50, well over half of that book is written in the form of recorded conversation. And Ruth has plenty to say, and Boaz has plenty to say, and Naomi has plenty to say, and the main characters, all their conversations recorded, not a word recorded about Elimelech. The man is empty, he had nothing to say. He dealt badly when faced with adversity. And he never speaks a word. In Psalm 143, we have David in a day of adversity. And watch how he handles it. Verse 3, the enemy hath persecuted my soul. He hath smitten my life down to the ground. He hath made me to dwell in darkness as those that have been long dead. Therefore is my spirit overwhelmed within me. My heart within me is desolate. That's adversity. Solomon says, consider. Now watch David. I remember the days of old. What's he doing now? He's considering. He's considering the works of God. He says, I remember the days of old. I meditate. He's considering on the work of thy hands. I muse on the work of thy hands. And then he says, I stretch forth my hands unto thee. My soul thirsteth after thee. Adversity for David. Did it drive him away from God? No. adversity for David. He put into practice what Solomon recommended. He considered. I remember the days of old. I meditate on all thy works. I muse on the works of thy hand. I stretch forth my hands unto thee. David would say like Job, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. Though he may send some affliction, 'twill but make me long for home. For in love and not in anger, all his chastenings will come. We're singing in closing this morning, it's 547 in Sankey, but that's not any good to us. It's going to be on the overhead here. Great hymn when the storms of